Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. And, yeah, we're just getting things underway on another nice-looking. It is warm, but it is a nice-looking Thursday afternoon. And Ferg was among the fortunate few at the intimate setting of Boutwell Arena last night, where Auburn opened the Stephen Pearl era with a fun game to watch.
Great game.
There was a lot. It was up and down, and there weren't many times the shot clock was in peril.
No, not at all. It was a lot of fun, and you know, Auburn, ultimately coming up short in that one, and there's plenty to go for it. It's a game that didn't count, but I think the big thing is, whether it's a combination of the venue or the situation that Auburn was in, the situation Oklahoma State was in, I mean, that's a brand-new roster over there, too. They played with an intensity. I mean, it felt like a midseason college basketball game in there. It mattered who was walking out of there with that win.
It felt like a conference game.
Yeah, it was great.
It was pretty intense.
Fantastic game.
The longer the game stayed close, right, you thought there was like, all right, well, neither of these teams wants to lose. Like, neither of these teams wants to back down. The starters are staying in and playing the whole game.
The coaches wanted to win that ball game.
There are some guys on both teams unafraid of taking big shots, too, right? There are some guys that wanted the ball for both of those teams.
OK State's got a couple of players.
Yeah.
My goodness. Roy has got some serious range, doesn't he?
And Curry can finish around
Curry
the rim,
really
too.
Can.
Both of those. They've got a couple of guards that could be, I mean, I don't know, that's a team I would keep an eye on as the season goes on. I know they were picked near the bottom of the Big 12 in the preseason, but picking a team low in the preseason in this day and age of college basketball, especially when they brought in so many new players.
When you got so many new guys, I mean, there's no telling.
Feels like it's a bit of a dice roll when you're projecting how a team is going to finish with so many new pieces. And yeah, I thought it was promising stuff. And then on the other side, you had Auburn, where practically everyone was making their debut except for Tahad for the most part.
Yeah, no, it was a game, I think, for Auburn where you learned a lot, and that's what you needed to come out of it, is you learned a lot. You've got a lot to correct, and how about this? You get 2 weeks to correct and fix off of that before you play your next exhibition. It's just it being this early just meant a ton, and now you get a lot of time to work on it. Nothing really surprised me last night. I thought this Auburn defense was going to be a work in progress. It showed they were going to be a work in progress. They had moments, but sustained just didn't work out. And Stephen Pearl said after the game, they felt like they just had a bad defensive game plan for what Oklahoma State ended up throwing at them. But you know, I'll continue to go back to this. If you're Auburn, score 95 points when you didn't shoot the ball very well, like jump shots or shot. I will say, shots that left your hand and went a distance, including free throws. Auburn did not do very well in those areas, and they still scored 95 points because this team is going to play fast, and they've got a ton of weapons.
Mm-hmm. And I thought credit to Auburn that they trailed most of the game. If I'm not mistaken, I mean,
only
Oklahoma
2.5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, Oklahoma State led for 35-plus minutes in the ball game last night, and Auburn kept fighting back. I mean, it looked like Oklahoma State would make a little run. They'd hit a big shot. Auburn would come back and, pull closer and closer and then get it back to even. So I thought that was good to see. I mean, it was a game where Tahad didn't shoot it very well, but he still hit a couple of big shots. Auburn did what?
Hit the biggest shot of the game in overtime.
That's right.
Tied it up late.
The shot.
He had not hit a shot in a while. Yeah, Auburn's biggest shot of the game. He had hit and he hits it. I mean, he just knocks it down.
Ties the game with 18.
Got, for one of the few times in the game, a decent bounce.
Decent bounce.
My goodness, those rims were a little tight.
Yeah, very, very tight. I will say. Also for this game, like you saw Keyshawn Hall, what he's capable of.
Yeah, indeed.
Auburn has a one-on-one scorer. They have a guy that is very, very confident. He is a matchup problem at the four. Can play some of the three as well. And my thing with Keyshawn Hall moving forward is I think he's a great scorer, fantastic scorer. There's going to be an adjustment period both for him and for Auburn to get used to one another. Auburn has not had a guy like that. Especially a guy who plays wing forward, who is a guy who's going to demand getting the ball in his hands and going to work with it. And Auburn's, I think, going to have to fit their offense around that. And I think he's also going to have to fit in that system as well. But played really, really well. Elijah Freeman, Sebastian Williams Adams both had really good runs. I liked what Kevin Overton did for stretches of that game.
Couple important baskets from Freeman towards the end. Yep. I know there's obviously going to be an adjustment for him playing, to move up to D1 ball.
You have ups and all those newcomers, all those guys who had never played D1 ball. Here's the thing, guys. Like, more than half of Auburn's rotation has never played D1 basketball. So,
and that's rare even for like a team that leaned heavily on the portal.
Yeah.
Right. Like, even if you look at other SEC teams, you look at teams, and usually if you're talking about like a starting over, like there were multiple examples last year in the conference. Where it's like, oh, Vanderbilt is almost entirely players from the portal. Arkansas, Kentucky. Yeah. But they were predominantly players that were from different levels.
A&M's going to be brand new this year.
That's not to say the Auburn way can't work, but it would explain that you could see a different team between the beginning of November and even the beginning of January.
100%. And I think also you got to like keep in mind some of the other stuff with it. Like, look, Keyshawn Murphy – we'll see if he's okay. I don't think it's anything major.
That's good. I mean, it was scary when it happened.
He did not go back to the locker room.
That was good to see him just sort of stretching it out there on the sideline.
Stretching it out on the sidelines. They put a brace on it. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say he wore a brace pretty much all preseason. He's had to deal with that. He's a big guy with knee issues. Yeah.
Yeah, but they really need him. They really need him.
Even before he got hurt, they were limited in his minutes.
Yes.
And Emeka Opurim barely played. He's coming back from that back injury. And so it's like, yes, Auburn's rim protection and interior defense was not very good. The rebounding was not where it needed to be to win that game last night. However, you got to keep in mind, like, they were banged up in the front court. And so a lot of those minutes in the front court, especially with playing Hall at the threesome, a lot of those minutes in the front court were guys who had never played a Division I basketball game. Mm-hmm. And Sebastian Williams Adams, who I thought played well, and Filip Jovic, who had his high moments and had his low moments. It's just he's making a transition. He's like, there were some plays in the game that were really, really good. There were some times where it looked like he was not really sure where to be, kind of got stuck out in no man's land. That's going to happen. This team's going to grow. This team is, I think we all knew already, like Auburn fans, like don't expect last year's team. Don't expect the last year. This is going to be a team, though, that has got a lot of growing to do. And, I mean, again, for the first time you roll a basketball out there and play against somebody that's not yourself, you score 95. You were down 11 in the first half and tied it. You were down 7. You were down 7 with 340 to go. That was the big thing for me. You're down 7 with 340 to go. Your center leaves the game with it. It could have been easy to be like, it's done.
That's
pack
it
up. Cut your losses. Get out of here. And they didn't. And then they're down 5 early in overtime and came back and tied that game as well. So it's like, it's a lot of fight. It's a lot of energy. They got plenty of, like, I think the execution needs to improve. But, like, the other thing is, I think if you're Auburn, if you'd have came out of that game last night and thought, wow, this is as good as it's going to get, like, you know, you'd have a lot to go. They have a lot of work to do. And I think for a team that's got so much to work on defense and on top of that, they could play a lot better on offense, and they scored 95 points.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, a couple of the guys that you expected to really see lighting it up did not. To me, one of the most pleasing numbers to see was with all that, with the pace of that ball game, 10 turnovers, 45 minutes, yeah. 10 turnovers with a bunch of guys that hadn't played together.
Yeah, their turnover percentage was a little over 10% in that game, which is really good for a, like you said, a brand new team.
Yeah.
The other one, and I know you got to hit them more of them, but 49 free throw attempts. Auburn did not come near that number last season at any point. 2 years ago, they had 50 against Alabama in that game, but that's it. Keyshawn Hall is going to get fouled every time he goes to the basket. That's just gonna be how it is. And I thought you saw at times of the game, they got off to a slow start shooting free throws. Second half was a lot better. You have weird stuff at the end, like, Tahad missing two, but, Elijah Freeman was one of his first four and then hit his final five to finish it or something like that. Like he had a really good response. This Auburn basketball team, to me, is not going to shoot less than 30% from deep very often. It's going to happen, though, from time to time. Like last season, Auburn had a top 63-point shooting team in college basketball. They had a dozen games last season where they shot 30% or worse from deep. Like, you're going to have cold nights. But if you do it with volume and you don't turn it over and you're finding other ways to get to the line and stuff like that, you'll live with it.
And I thought Auburn, I mean, even though they didn't win the game, I thought Auburn offensively overcame a really slow first 8, 10, 12 minutes. I mean, Auburn's got 12 halfway through the first half.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
what happened in that first, that start? They were just missing shots.
Yeah.
They were getting looks. I think you didn't really see them kind of force it and get too crazy the shots. So the second half, you started seeing that a little bit more. There's a lot to correct from this game. But it's the first time these guys have played with one another. And that's important to keep in mind.
That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining Bill and Dan here in the studio here on this Thursday edition of The Drive. We'd love for you to join in if you had a chance to watch the ball game last night. We'd love your thoughts. What did you think of this new edition of the Tigers? I think it's going to be a fun team to watch this year, but as Justin and we've talked about, I mean, there are going to be some ups and downs, especially early on.
Tahad's going to sort of figure out his. It's like you're talking about football with like a run pass balance. I think with Tahad, it's like his pass shoot balance, right? Like how often Tahad wants to use his skills to get his teammates high quality shots, and how often he's going to be looking for his own shot, which is something I imagine he's going to wrestle with on every possession as to what's the best way to attack. But yeah, I thought that he at times, and especially in that late basket, he was able to remind you why everyone was so excited to bring him back.
Why he's a preseason all everything. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in and want to talk a little basketball. Obviously, Auburn football getting ready now to host the Missouri Tigers, another Saturday night game over at Jordan-Hare Stadium. So your thoughts on that. Don't forget, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who is right now just getting going with his final hour of his talk show on WGOW. He'll join us in the second hour as well.
We're going to talk a lot of football with Ferg, not only as we get his reaction to the Georgia game and what he's seen so far from Auburn, but also his expectations Saturday night. You want to take a break and then come back to reset with football?
Yeah. We might as well do that. We'll do that. You can join us as well here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Before we continue, Ferg, just talk a little bit, catch us up on what's out there, what's the latest on the Observer, and what's coming up.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. We have got observations from the Auburn-Oklahoma State game out this morning. So if you didn't get to watch the game, didn't get to listen to the game, or even if you did, and you want to hear what was said after the game from Stephen Pearl and just insights from the numbers, the rotation charts, stuff like that. You check that out there. Have several stories out this week on Auburn basketball. Media days yesterday. Did some takeaways from there. Talked to Charles Barkley earlier this week, along with Stephen Pearl and Bruce Pearl. Story up on that. And previewing the Auburn-Missouri game coming up this week. Dan and I are going to record a podcast tonight where we will talk Auburn basketball and Auburn football. And then tomorrow's mailbag's got a lot of both in it. So auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. Everything we do gets sent straight to your email inbox. And so if you sign up today while you're listening to this, you'll get two things tomorrow morning. So auburnobserver.com.
Saw Bruce there at the arena last night, and then today.
Hard to miss him, the cutaways and the fact that he was. I mean, what was it? Was it pregame? He was out there chatting the refs up a little bit, you know, just catching him up on his retirement, and then he's in the news.
That is exactly right. He's today in the news. CBS, TNT. He is. I mean, that's no surprise that somebody would want and try to get him wrapped up as quickly as possible to be part of their broadcast. And he will be a part of CBS and TNT's expanded college basketball. Going to be interesting, though, because it's primarily Big 12 and Big East.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, unless you go to ESPN, you're not going to cover the SEC. I like it, though. Like, don't talk about the SEC. Like, it'll do NCAA tournament stuff for sure, but, like, I kind of like a coach who spent his career, the most known part of his career, he's going to be talking about other leagues and other teams with fresh eyes, and I think that's a really cool. And obviously, you know, his time at ESPN got him fully trained for that.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and he had done that in the past too. When like Auburn gets eliminated from the NCAA tournament, he showed up on those studio shows. I think it's a great move for him. He's a guy that's always going to want to be in the. Want to be around basketball and a natural talker, so I think it's a great fit.
Yeah, I mean, I know the plan is for him to do some studio work. He's going to call some games, too. This is TNT's coverage of the Big East and the Big 12.
I completely missed the Big East going to TNT. I completely like that.
I believe they still have some Fox stuff, too. Okay. I think this is TNT sort of post-NBA up.
They've gotten extra.
Does NBC still have Big East stuff? Because I don't think so anymore.
Maybe not, but yeah. I know Fox still has those games, and I believe, or maybe that's the other network involved. I know the Big East has another partner other than just.
I think TNT also has a Mountain West deal too. Yeah, that's some fun basketball. If you've never watched Mountain West basketball,
TNT sort of replaced. It's like Moneyball when Giambi leaves. Like TNT replaced the NBA with a bunch of less flashy, but. You know, still quality basketball brands that they're going to be able to show that probably won't move the needle like NBA, especially with the Barkley show that they had there too. But no, you know, they're staying in there. And yeah, Bruce Pearl, Jalen Rose, Jamal Mashburn, part of the coverage. Chris Webber will be part of the team as well. And yeah, Bruce will be. I'm sure he's going to be a big part of NCAA tournament coverage as well.
That.
Bruce
would
be excellent at. And it's not always the easiest thing to jump to. I think Bruce would be excellent on color, right? Like he wants to.
Yeah,
like,
he's going to do it.
Yeah, in game,
that's the plan.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys sort of ease into that with like a year in the studio or something. But I think with Bruce, like he should take to it. And you've seen some legendary coaches who pivot into that and they're excellent at it. Billy Packer, right, for a long time was somebody who was just he was outstanding. And in his role going from coach to analyst. And yeah, I could see Bruce Pearl having a similar trajectory, depending on how much he wants to do it. Like, there's also the question of, like...
Right. I mean, because he talked about being able to spend more time with his family, with the grandkids, you know, and so we'll see. But we'll get an opportunity to see Bruce. I mean, there's no question about that. So congrats to him on that.
And TNT has Florida, Arizona. On opening night, by the way, Monday, November 3rd.
TNT's got players there, so Auburn's going to be involved.
Auburn will be there in Vegas. Presumably, Bruce will be part of the coverage in Las Vegas for the players era. There's TNT mentioned. TNT mentions in the press release, and I don't know if they have broadcast announcements for this, but opening night, they've got Arizona and Florida in Vegas, followed by BYU with DeBonsa and Villanova. Playing in the nightcap, so nice way to
that's a pretty good way to get things started
to announce your way into the college basketball space as a network.
All right, 334-321-1390. Love to hear from you, your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Dan, your Dodgers looking to go ahead and move one game closer to the to getting back to the series to try to repeat.
Yeah, well, I wanted to see them take one in Milwaukee. Happy to see that they were able to they're able to put the real pressure on the Brewers now with three games in LA and a couple of rested up pitchers. They haven't had to go. I think being able to avoid a start where you have to go to the bullpen real early helps too, right? Mm-hmm. Like the thought that you had.
Yeah, well, they haven't been close to that.
No, you've had
17 innings out of your two starters.
And Glasnow was great in a big moment the last time he pitched for the Dodgers, probably his best performance as a Dodger. So, yeah, the Brewers are in a tough spot, right?
Because you're facing
a well-rested Glasnow in LA in a game that you probably have to win. So,
meanwhile, the Blue Jays bats woke up last night. Was it 12 or 13-4 was the final yesterday as they look to even up the series and regain home field advantage.
Seattle's had a flair for the dramatic this year. Ferg, you were at the Home Run Derby, right? Mm-hmm. The dumper took that one all the way to the very end. Even the All-Star game, right, which came down to the last pitch in the tiebreaker, and then the way Seattle advanced, right? It just feels like It feels like this thing's going to go down to the absolute wire. I'll predict it right now, Bill. ALCS is going seven. That's a seven game series, and maybe even extras. You know what? Maybe we'll keep that. They won't even be able to settle it in seven.
Game seven will be the never ending game.
Seven 9-inning games. Yeah, they're gonna keep on playing.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I know nobody has come back from down 2-0 losing the first two at home in the championship series. I'm trying to remember, has anybody even made it to a game seven losing their first two at home?
Reversing course, though, and winning game three is huge, right?
Oh,
like,
yes.
Just like we were saying, like that's kind of what – I mean, that's what the Brewers have to do tonight unless they're going to try to pull a Red Sox here or something. But
don't see that coming.
But no, although, you know, Dave Roberts was a big part of that.
Yes, indeed he
was.
Big
part of that comeback, but he was on the winning end. But no, hopefully we'll see what the Dodgers can do tonight. It's a really big moment for Glasnow.
All right, tell you what, why don't we go ahead and get to break early so that we can – we'll shift into football, but there's no reason to start talking about it when we've only got a couple of minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break. So we'll get to our bottom of the hour break a little early.
Do we have some we'll talk about it when we come back. Yeah, there's some news. Well, yeah, we'll talk.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, no, if there are a couple of other things we got to.
Well, then, I mean, the Cignetti contract would be part of the football conversation.
Part of football.
I mean, because
his name, with all the coaching changes and the rumors of more coaching changes, his was, if not the first name, among the first names that you were going to hear.
Good for him, man. We were talking about it with when I was doing the Doug show earlier today. And it was more with Clark Lee. Like, it seemed he's an easy coach to root for. You hope that he stays at his alma mater and makes it work. You totally understand why a superpower would call Clark Lee after the last two seasons at Vanderbilt. Indiana's probably a more pronounced version of that with Cignetti taking them to the...
I'd almost want to wait and see how Vandy's going to be without Diego Pavia.
Before you made a move on Clark Lee?
Before that's I fair. Invested too much.
Although,
I think he's done a tremendous job. And their defense is real.
Ferg, where are you on that? Do you think like a superpower looking for a coach would kick the tires on Clark Lee or should kick the tires on Clark Lee?
No, I think Clark Lee and Brent Key at Georgia Tech are in the exact same boat. These are two guys that have done an excellent job winning at their alma maters. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they just want to keep coaching at their alma maters. And instead of stepping up to a bigger job with bigger stresses and all that, and yes, more money, better teams potentially – I wouldn't be surprised if either of those guys just like, you know what? I could be the best coach my alma mater's ever had.
Oh, you're
there's a lot of pride you can keep. I think Cignetti's potentially doing – Indiana's not his alma mater, but I think Cignetti's potentially doing that towards the end of his career.
You get a statue built there, I mean, as opposed to going somewhere else.
Yeah, and people being like, you know, oh, this guy, he used to be good when he was at these other schools. No, I think a lot of guys are going to get paid this year in this cycle – who have no interest in going elsewhere, but other teams that are desperate for head coaches are going to kick the tires on them. They should. But wouldn't be surprised at all if Clark Lee and Brent Key are both
hey,
heavily talked about names that end up staying where they are.
I've had a couple of folks from the state of Tennessee say, you'd be surprised if you think Vandy doesn't have any money to be able to keep Clark Lee. You'd be a little surprised.
Would Dillingham also fall into this category of coaches who might want to stay at their alma maters and win a great deal rather than take the pressure of a more traditional superpower? I don't know. I think all those guys are. I think they're all tremendous coaches.
Yeah, I think it's almost easier in the SEC than it might be in the Big 12. But I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. You know, Kenny's still what is he, like 32 or something now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
He's a little older than me, and I'm 32.
Okay, well he's not much older. Yeah.
He just got
Kenny's like 34, 35.
Yeah, he got his permit a couple of years. He got to learn his permit a couple of years ago. By the way, it's probably gonna be the last time this ever happens, Bill. Where there's a game in the NFL this weekend where both of the quarterbacks are older than me. And it's like I don't know how.
Yeah, the older you get, the less likely that's gonna be.
It's Rodgers and Flacco.
Wow.
This weekend, it's like, oh, that's you know, running out of opportunities to see that.
All right, now we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, we'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, here on the Thursday Drive.
Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock now. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And, we'll talk a little Auburn football because we're here in Auburn. The Tigers.
Only because we're contractually obligated. I'm not getting paid for this.
We're not. We don't have to, but I feel like we should.
Oh, we need to.
Sure.
I
don't know anything new we're about to discuss, but you know, we have to do it anyway.
And that
may be as surprising as some of the things we've talked about over the last month.
Y'all want a preview of tomorrow's mailbag? I got some numbers for you. Ready?
Yeah, here we go.
So we were talking about I had a question about Auburn's offense, and somebody had brought up that like, hey, you know, if Auburn just scores 20-something points in some of these games they've lost under Hugh Freeze, that should be enough to win. I don't think that's too much of an ask like to do. And I ran the numbers, and right now in college football, the teams that are averaging, Auburn would win every one of their games this season if they scored like, it was like 27 or something like that this season. Anyway, two-thirds of the
– Yeah, they haven't allowed more than 24.
Yeah, I mean, two-thirds of the power conference teams – it's 25 – two-thirds of the power conference teams in football right now are averaging 25 or more points against other power conference competition this season.
And that's where –
So you're in the bottom third already.
I mean, Auburn is skewed in SEC play.
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn scored 30 points. Auburn scored 30, giving up 60.
This will get really
37.
This will really get you
the
here.
Offense scored 30.
Under Hugh Freeze, Auburn has played 23 games against power conference opponents. His record is 7-16.
Mm-hmm.
In those games, his teams have only scored 28 points or more four times. Against a bad Arkansas team in 2023, a pre-breakout Vanderbilt team in 2023, a marathon against Texas A&M in 2024, and then Baylor this season. Rough defense against Baylor. It gets worse. Auburn has been held to less than 20 points 13 different times. That means more than half of the games that Freeze has coached against power conference opponents, he has scored less than 20 points.
And
it gets even worse than that. Auburn has been held to just one touchdown in a game six different times. Mm-hmm. That means they have only scored one touchdown more times in games that they have scored four touchdowns under Hugh Freeze.
And how many of those one touchdown games came in the last 3 weeks, right? I mean, don't you have three?
Three of them.
Yeah. I mean, three of those games have come this already this season.
And then I say, continuing this takes a little bit of bending of some logic, but walk with me here. If Auburn just scored 28 points in each of their losses under Hugh Freeze, they've just gotten a 28, okay? Mm-hmm. All those games got in 28. It would be enough to turn 11 of those into mm-hmm. wins and forced overtime in two others, which means Auburn is currently our head coach, Hugh Freeze, is 14-17.
That means he could be 25-6 right now if Auburn had just gotten to 28 in all those games.
And,
or better, because they would have forced overtime
and
into
that,
those games.
And that is so perplexing because that's one of the main reasons Hugh Freeze was hired.
Hugh Freeze was hired because of his, for I think, three big reasons. Number one is offense. Number two is recruiting and his experience in this league winning against better teams in this
right.
league.
Those are the arguments, yeah.
I mean, I would.
He has done one of those things.
And here's your
and
next.
That one is slipping right now.
Here's your next assignment, all right, now go back and see how long it's been since Auburn has had that many games in which they have not been able to score. I mean, because as much complaining as there has been for, you know, over a decade about Auburn's offense, It's been better than this.
Yeah.
So I mean, substantially.
Yeah, I'm gonna run that hole.
Better than this.
Yeah. I've been hammering the point this week that, and again, it's not all on Jackson Arnold, but it feels like the passing offense is a huge problem right now. And with Hugh Freeze, it's the second year in a row. And you can, even if you punt the first season with Peyton Thorne, because Auburn was trying to desperately
fill. That
was
Auburn's best offensive season with Hugh at Auburn.
And Auburn was trying to, you know, they were trying to fill the roster in those in the 6 months between, you know, Freeze getting the job and preseason practice starting up, whatever it was. Like, coming off of Thorne's first year, Freeze made the decision to keep Thorne for another year, which was debatable, you know, as to, you know, trying to fix a quarterback instead of going out and getting someone coming off of a quality season. And then this year, with his, you know, with sort of an with existential stakes to how the Hugh Freeze era goes, he went out and got Jackson Arnold, who, as you've pointed out, Justin, was last in the conference last year.
He's exactly the same quarterback he was last year
in yards per attempt,
in terms of his numbers.
And playing like this at Oklahoma got him benched during the conference opener. I would point that out too. Putting up nearly identical stats as to his stats at Oklahoma got him benched in the fourth quarter of the Tennessee game, their first conference game last year. He didn't play at Auburn.
Right.
In the second game, he was the backup quarterback for that one. You know, it was, I mean, a captain quit on Monday, and so that was the first question at the press conference. Second question at the press conference was Justin Ferguson asking, how stable is the situation with Jackson as the starter? Are you looking elsewhere? And I think it's totally fair. Like, it's you know, at a point now where
I had people asking me this week. It was like, well, what did you think they were going to change? I don't know, man. They've had less than 300 yards of offense for three straight weeks for the first time since 2008. They can't score more than a touchdown in a game. Changing something probably would make sense.
Yeah.
And it might not just be quarterback. It could be something else. But honestly, if you look at the Auburn offense, what is going to change other than quarterback and offensive line? There's nothing else to change. You have no other options.
And I want to see a different quarterback before I make judgments about the offensive line. Because I think there were times, I mean, watching the game Saturday, because Ferg, you were at the two road games, and we were not.
Yeah.
But watching the game Saturday made me wonder, well, how open have these receivers been the last 2 weeks? And how often has there been somewhere for Jackson to go with the ball? And
I can tell you for a fact at Oklahoma there were times to throw it. And open guys.
Yeah. I mean, it just.
Not as much against Texas A&M.
You know, I came away from those guys, and at some point, like, it's fair to wonder about the offensive line. It's fair to wonder about the play calling. But,
definitely.
But so much of this.
Well, what's going to change? What's going to change about the play calling?
Exactly.
You can't. You're down to two healthy scholarship running backs. All your wide receivers are already playing them for the most part. Like, your tight ends are the same. Like, what else can you change besides your quarterback or your offensive line?
And Hugh Freeze reiterated today, in the 5 or 6 minutes that we got at the end of practice, that they'd gone back and looked at it, and the calls were there. They just the ball didn't get where it was supposed to.
I'm sure
he said either, you know, for whatever split second here, split second there, or the ball just not being thrown where it needed to be.
Okay, so
what could have been big plays.
Let's do my least favorite thing in the world, which is take coaches at face value and believe that everything they say implicitly. But let's just do that for a brief moment. If that is true,
then why do you keep going back to
what's
the same?
What's changing?
Parts. Yeah. Why do you use the same?
What are you going to do the same? Yeah. I was going to say, if you're making all the right calls, or you're making a majority of the good calls, or all that, and the current personnel you have on the field is not executing them, why do you keep going back to the same thing?
Why would you expect it to change?
Yeah, you had four. You had four drives. I mean, look at the four drives in the second half before Georgia makes it a 10-point lead. Like Auburn has four. Mm-hmm. Auburn gets the ball four times in the second half.
They get one first down and they go three and out.
And I believe the first down is defensive holding by Georgia. Like I think it's a penalty that gets the like Auburn.
No, Arnold has a quarterback keeper for 10 yards.
Okay, because are you sure? I know he has one.
They moved the chain early, but still,
you're talking about
that got him
to midfield maybe
fewer than 30 yards.
The first possession was a failed fourth when Auburn stopped.
Yes, but they get a first down.
Did they get a first down on that one? Okay.
Yes, they got a first down on
because
that one.
Because I know
they
were three straight three and outs.
Yes.
I mean, I think at some point, you're absolutely right. Like, what can change?
But
it's not. I wonder.
Hugh Freeze is not going to fire himself.
And I wondered earlier in the season.
He's not going to fire himself as offensive coordinator.
He actually went through. We'll see if we can find the audio. If not, I've got it. Because he went through and hit on a play on those possessions that was there and
sure.
was not made.
Okay, so if the play calls were
that's
right.
That's right. Well, we do. You do know that. I mean, the fourth down play. There's nothing wrong with that. Preston Howard is wide open,
right,
on the fourth down play.
Right. I am willing to say that there have been plays that are open. The Oklahoma game is a perfect example of there were plays that Jackson Arnold did not make. Our Auburn's offensive line did not hold.
Well, the first and last of those four series, I guess, were the Preston Howard, and then the Eric Singleton.
Yeah.
I mean, and Eric Singleton's walking into the end zone.
If nothing is changing, why should anybody expect anything different?
Why should the results be different?
Because here's the thing. On Saturday, Missouri might not be as good of a defense overall as Georgia, but they got a better pass rush. They got a better pass rusher, I know, because he used to be at Georgia, and Georgia would kill to have him right now. Yep. So, like, and they're an awesome run defense, just like Georgia was.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that, like, I've been trying to kind of – get the point across this week at the Observer and elsewhere. It's like, this is business as usual for an offense that believes, well, they're on the verge. They're close. And it's like, okay, maybe you're close, but like how close are you? Like really, like if we're saying, well, we had the right play call and you threw an incompletion, it's like, okay, you're getting one more touchdown?
Well, it's almost like you're close, but there is the plexiglass or something there that you don't realize. You can't get through it without a jackhammer or without something
Here's my main problem, though, Bill, is that you're in the middle of year three with an offensive-minded head coach, and not only are you not close, but the bar has been way lower.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Because if you're sitting here saying, well, we could have won that game, or well, we could have done this or that if you didn't fumble the ball, or if you'd have thrown that, if it's just one or two plays, okay,
I can't.
We could have scored 20.
I can't manage your expectations, right, or whatever the answer was Monday there when he talked about the response there.
I don't want to get myself in trouble.
I think it's absolutely and it's fair to wonder when you look at the passing stats, especially like. You're close. Like you're raving about a first half where Jackson had what 104 yards. Like in total,
he had 5 yards an attempt, and it was like, wow, that was as perfect as you'd want it to be. And I'm like, is it?
Yeah, he's talked. Yeah,
you got Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton out there.
Going back to what he said today, he continued to talk about making his quarterback as comfortable as possible.
How?
By not throwing the ball downfield, not taking too long to get the ball out of his hands.
Okay, you're one of 11 on passes of 10 or more yards down the field over your last two.
Well,
games.
I guess then you're
some
uncomfortable.
Point, you're going to have to do that. You can't. You cannot build. This is not an air raid.
You
this
can't
is not an
throw
air raid
the ball
team.
3 yards. You know, yeah. three yards over and over and over, just, and expect to pile up the points.
It's a problem, and I wrote this Sunday morning after the Georgia game. It's a problem, a major problem, when you as a head coach or you're in the middle of year three and your main talking point at the press conference after the game is we don't know how to win. You're 31 games into it.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to win by now, you've got to look around and say, what more do you need? What else can is it going to take? And you can say, well, they need to get a different quarterback. Or, well, they need to – you've had that opportunity multiple times. It's just – that's – it's just – It's very, very alarming. And I'll also say this. There's time for this season to turn around. You beat Missouri, you maybe beat Arkansas, you can beat Kentucky. And then you're looking, if we're talking about a 6-3 Auburn team in a few weeks, things feel different.
Oh yeah.
Not everybody's happy, but things feel different. There's still time to turn it all around. But what is Auburn doing to get different results? And right now, I don't see it. And I don't see what, and I don't know if we're going to see anything different on Saturday.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. We'll be back with your phone calls here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Remember when you would dream?
Welcome back into the Drive, final segment of hour number one. Let's get to the Drive hotline, and Uncle Ollie is up first. What's up, Unc?
Always glad to talk to you, gentlemen.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Hey, bud.
Yeah, oh, not much. I was listening to a show earlier about Auburn's woes, and I heard a national championship quarterback say that Auburn's offense is actually pretty simple. It's not a complicated offense. Mm-hmm. The deal with Auburn's offense, you have to have a quarterback that can make a decision in a split second.
Yep.
He's got to make that decision. So my thing is, when you have a quarterback that has totally lost his confidence, I'm not sure he can do that.
I'm with you. We thought coming into this season, the whole thing was going to be, it's going to be the RPO, it's going to mm-hmm. be the split, the quick reads, the quick trigger. That's got to be where you thrive. And that's the thing where it's like with Jackson Arnold, you're right. Like the lack of confidence there, the lack of that, you know, ability to pull the trigger is one thing. And you wonder where a guy like Ashton Daniels or a guy like Deuce Knight will just go in there and just maybe zip it around and just see where you're at. Because I think you're at the point now where it's, you know, just playing it safe is just – it's not going to work. So why not risk it a little bit more?
Yeah, indecisiveness is probably like the right word to describe it. And with Jackson, yeah, I mean, you said lost the confidence. I mean, you're at a point now in his college football career. I don't know if he ever had it. Right? Like, he had it coming out of high school as one of the top quarterbacks in the country, but like at some point as a football player, you are your college football resume. And with Jackson, it's been a struggle most of the time he's been out there.
Yeah. I agree. I know y'all bet to go to break, but I was going to ask a quick trivia question.
All right.
So, coming up, there's an NFL game that will have two left-handed quarterbacks facing each other. That will be Dillon Gabriel and Tua. Mm-hmm. When was the last time two left-handed quarterbacks faced each other?
Ooh.
And who were they?
My first thought that just jammed into my head was, did Vic and Roethlisberger go against each other? Is that it?
That's halfway right.
Halfway right, okay.
Actually, 2006, okay. Michael Vick faced Chris Sims.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
There haven't been two lefty quarterbacks facing it. And keep in mind with Gabriel and Tua, they're both from like 20 miles apart in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like they're both Hawaiian dudes that grew up very close to one another, and Tua is one of Dillon Gabriel's heroes.
And my understanding is if there's a chance it actually might happen again next weekend. I think Atlanta, which is Michael Penix, is playing, I think, Miami. So it could be Penix and Tua. So it might be that it happens 2 weeks in a row when it hasn't happened since 2006.
Hey, shout out to all of us lefties out there.
Yeah, shout out to the Falcons, too, by the way. One team in the NFL, top five in offense and defense right now, total offense and total defense, and it is the Atlanta Falcons. How about that?
Yeah, no kidding. All right, the music means we are halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. David Paschal joins us from Chattanooga on the other side, so stick with us here on the Thursday Drive. Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this nice-looking Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. We talked a good bit about Auburn basketball, which opened the Stephen Pearl era last night in the, I guess it was the first night of Ballin' in Boutwell. Alabama, Florida State playing tonight there at Boutwell Arena. Auburn falling in overtime 97-95 to Oklahoma State. And as we said a while ago, Justin, I think the Oklahoma State made some nice additions as well through the portal.
Yeah, they just went and got a bunch of dudes who could score, and it worked out really well for them. Their front court was a little banged up in that game as well. So, I mean, I think Oklahoma State, as good as the Big 12 is, like, they're going to have a chance to make the tournament. I think the team I saw last night, I think Auburn's got a lot of room to improve. They got a long way to go, especially on the defensive end, but Oklahoma State team was a lot feistier than I thought they were going to be on offense.
A very fun game. Justin was there last night. We'll talk more about that a little later on. But right now, we're going to head to the Drive hotline. Welcome in our regular Thursday afternoon 5 o'clock hour guest, and that is David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who is just a few minutes past wrapping up his show on WGOW. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing marvelous. I hope you guys are.
We are. When it comes to football, though, it feels like same song, different verse for Auburn.
For Auburn. Yeah, you know, it's one of those that you can say what you want about that call. I mean, they definitely missed it. I mean, the argument is, was it an Auburn touchdown or a Georgia touchdown? But obviously it wasn't called that way. But my biggest deal about that is if you're Auburn – you're up 10-0 still, and they're at their 1 yard line or 1 foot line or whatever it is, and you got to keep them out of the end zone. There's not enough time to do the you shouldn't have enough time to get down the field, but you do if you commit 35 yards in penalties. And so that game should have never been 10-3 at halftime. And then I guess I saw the stat that I'm sure y'all have talked about, that from the Jackson Arnold fumble until the time Gunnar Stockton scored, Auburn had, what, one first down and 15 total yards. Right. And, I mean, that's just – you can't – that's inexcusable. You can't have the penalties, and you can't have the second half offensive collapses, and you dang sure can't start out in the SEC 0-3 3 years in a row.
And it's not just 0-3, David, but picture this, right? Like, if Auburn's offense had been delivering winning football the last three games, and the defense – was the primary culprit in the reason Auburn was 0-3, I think there'd be panic and maybe talk about DJ Durkin's job at Auburn. Instead, you've had winning football. You've had the defense do seemingly enough three games in a row, and yet you're still 0-3, and the offense is supposed to be Hugh Freeze's calling card.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, y'all know the Auburn history. Most of Auburn's really bad years have Auburn's had some really bad seasons with some really good defenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and fortunately, they're teetering to make that a reality again. I mean, this is certainly just a huge game this week as far as stopping the bleeding. But, yeah, I mean, if this does not work out for Hugh Freeze, I mean, his legacy at Auburn is going to be that, you know, he thought that, you know, Peyton Thorne and Jackson Arnold were, you know, those were the guys that were going to, you know, lead them to 10 wins. And they have just not been able to show that. And it's you know, Jackson had a great first game against Baylor, but the SEC, as we all know, he has really struggled.
Yeah, and I just think, going off of that, David, like, the one thing is, not only was Auburn's offense better with Peyton Thorne last season than it is this year, but I think it's going to come to the point where you get to the end of year three or whenever this is, and you're going to look around and say, okay, what has the common denominator been with Auburn's offense in various forms looking the way it has these last three seasons? And that does not bode well at all for a guy who, in large part, was hired to come fix the offense for Auburn.
No, and I don't think anyone would be able to argue convincingly that this year's offensive line is not better than last year's. This year's receiving core should be as good a receiving core as Auburn's had in a while, yet the offensive numbers are worse than they were a year ago, and last year was worse than year one.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, if you're still trying to be an optimist, you know, and again, that's why this week is so big, but, you know, you can make the argument that Auburn has played against some good defenses, although that Georgia defense, I mean, you know, I don't think the Georgia defense is what Georgia's been the last couple of years. I mean, I saw Tennessee torch that Georgia defense a month ago. But, you know, losing to A&M and losing to Oklahoma, there's no shame in that. It's just, you know, Bill, it's like you brought me on. It's the same song, third verse that you saw the other night. Mm-hmm. And so that's got to be just so frustrating, just reliving that same and the penalties. I mean, the fact that you're going to commit over 10 penalties in every SEC game, or at least you're on track for that, I mean, that's just, you know, when you're stronger in the first half and the second half and you commit a whole bunch of penalties, that's, I mean, that can't fall anywhere but the coaching.
No, you're absolutely right about that, David. I mean, it's and the other thing that is perplexing to hear is when Hugh Freeze is asked about possible changes, and it sounds like now the same guys are going to roll out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's where you wonder about the depth and what he sees in practice, because that can be awfully frustrating. It's everybody wants to see the backup quarterback, and when you've got a coach that's a little bit gun-shy about that can kind of cause a divide with the fan base even more.
Well, here we are. I mean, everybody is at least at the midpoint of the season as we head down the stretch. And this is the – crazy to think. This is the only week of the season where all SEC teams are playing against each other. So we've got 8 conference games here this weekend. And, I mean, you look around and a lot of the preseason favorites – already have a ding or two, and so I mean it's getting critical. I mean the game of the week, I think is the Georgia Ole Miss game, because Ole Miss, there aren't many opportunities, it doesn't appear, for Ole Miss to lose. This is definitely one of them, and Georgia coming off the win against Auburn this past week has put themselves back where they need to be, and The thought of Kirby losing back-to-back, well, I guess it wouldn't be back-to-back. It'd be 2 out of 3 at home. But still, losing 2 home games in 1 year is almost, you know, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and if you flip it with Lane Kiffin, he has done so much, obviously, since he's been at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. But the one thing he has not done is beat a ranked SEC team on the road. He knocked off Tulane a couple of years ago when they were number 24 at the beginning of the season down in New Orleans, but he is still looking for his first road win over a ranked SEC team. And, of course, Georgia gives them not only a ranked team but a top 10 team. And, you know, Kiffin's just unbelievable what he's done with the portal. I mean, you could make the argument who's been more successful, him or Clark Lee, because Clark Lee has certainly totally revamped Vanderbilt through the portal with him raiding New Mexico State for both Pavia and a lot of the assistants. But Ole Miss is a very different team than a year ago. I mean, they don't, you know, their entire defensive line's pretty much in the pros now when they brought in Walter Nolan and all those guys from a year ago. But, you know, he said it earlier this week in his news conference. He's like, this was kind of supposed to be a rebuilding year for us. We've got 20 of a 22 new guys. 20 out of the 22 guys are new at their position. So, you know, you could argue that they've already overachieved. And I do think their schedule has been very, very favorable.
Oh, yes.
To this point. And so this could be, you know, it's weird, though. I just don't see, you know, Georgia won this game 52-17 2 years ago. I just don't see Georgia doing that to anybody this year. They just don't have that offense where they can run away and hide. So, I mean, really like a convincing Georgia win this year kind of seems like, well, it was 20-10 last week. So something along the lines of like 27-13 seems like a convincing win for Georgia this year.
David, we have so much information about so many of these players that it's hard for a guy to come out of nowhere in the SEC. But if Ole Miss wins this game, the story of Trinidad going from a guy that I mean, I don't think anyone but the hardest of hardcores knew about – to one of the top quarterbacks in the conference, and it only took about 6 weeks or so for that transformation to take place.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers aren't just eye-popping, but, I mean, his one-loss record certainly is. And, I mean, of course, everybody loved that stat at the beginning. His very first game at Ole Miss, you know, there were more people at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium than saw him in all 15 games combined last right. year with Ferris State. I mean, that was a great stat. But, no, it's a neat little deal. I mean, I run every day up on Lookout Mountain, and there's a huge Ole Miss fan. And when I ran by their house today, they had the Trinidad and Tobago flag out, like you see all over the Grove this year. So it's been a great story to follow, and it sounds like he's going to get the start again over Austin Simmons, who I believe is healthy enough to play. But it's his show now. So it is a super duper neat story.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting ball game. Physical. You're right. Georgia with Gunnar Stockton is not a flashy quarterback, and they're not an explosive offense. But boy, he is just one tough son of a gun.
He is, and I mean, he's a guy that it's not over. I mean, he's the definition of playing the full 60 minutes. I'm interested in the news last night where Georgia revealing that safety Kyron Jones is out for the year. I mean, that's no small loss. You know, Georgia's secondary's kind of struggled to play the ball this year, and it does seem like the offensive line may be a little bit healthier this week. I know Kirby was talking about Ernest Green and Freeling and how they've been able to do a lot of stuff this week. And so that becomes a key part, too, because they've just been that offensive line. I mean, six games in, they've used six different starting lineups.
Yep. Of course, it is the third Saturday in October, and Alabama-Tennessee. Alabama right now, David, it's hard to argue that anybody is playing better than Alabama in the SEC. And a Tennessee team coming in that hasn't been maybe as explosive offensively and has been susceptible defensively. How do you see this matchup in Tuscaloosa?
I think the scary aspect from the Tennessee standpoint is you've got your best chance of victory is Alabama doing something that it hadn't done in a while. You know, you need for Alabama to all of a sudden go out of character, because the best matchup for the Crimson Tide would be the way Ty Simpson's playing. You know, and you've got Bernard and Ryan Williams and Isaiah Horton, and Tennessee hadn't had their two top cornerbacks all year. So they've been, you know, Colton Hood that played at Auburn, he's been a redshirted at Auburn, he's been one of the starters, and Ty Redmond, a true freshman, has been the other starting corner. So that is certainly a matchup that favors Alabama with mm-hmm. those receivers against Tennessee's corners. Tennessee, they've given up well, Georgia got 198 rushing yards, but Mississippi State got over 200, and Arkansas got 240. So they've been struggling to stop the run, and they're dead last in the SEC in passing defense. But they're very opportunistic. I mean, they lead the nation in sacks. They've created a bunch of turnovers. So Tennessee's going to give up yards, and your hope if you're Tennessee is that you can turn Alabama over. But Alabama doesn't turn over this year. I mean, they've had two turnovers. You know, Simpson's thrown one pick and they've lost one fumble. So, again, for Tennessee to win, Alabama's going to have to do something out of character.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. The game that the one that I think people have done double takes when they looked at is Vandy being favored over LSU in Nashville. But Clark, you mentioned Clark Lee and the job that he has done. It's been phenomenal. Meanwhile, LSU still looking to get their offense going.
Yeah, I think this one, the lower scoring this is, the better LSU's chances are. I mean, this was the game that LSU won 24-17 in Baton Rouge a year ago with a worse defense, but it was also facing a Diego Pavia who at that point was starting to get beat up. You know, he was beat up against LSU, South Carolina, and Tennessee down the stretch last year, which is why Vanderbilt, I think, went from like 6-2 to 6-6 or whatever it was before they won their bowl game. But, you know, the wild stat with this one is this will snap. Right now, Vandy is like a 2-point favorite,
right,
and this will snap a 176-game streak of Vanderbilt being an underdog against a ranked team.
Wow.
I mean, this goes back to like 78.
I was going
to
say, how far back does that go?
When these lines, when the 1A and 1AA split, and they started putting these lines on games.
Almost.
This is this goes back to at least 1978, and may go beyond. So, but I, you know, it's one of those where a lot of people like Vandy being in Nashville, but I just think LSU's defense will come to play and will kind of contain him enough to where I'm kind of going against the grain on a lot of people this week because I kind of like LSU in a close, low scoring game.
David, it's so cool to see stories like Clark Lee and Brent Key and for that matter, you know, Cignetti's in the same ballpark, even if it's not his alma mater, as far as like a place turning into sort of an unlikely.
He's in a little higher rent district today,
but an unlikely contender in the conference, I'd love to see Brent Key or I'd love to see Clark Lee stick around, but I totally understand why a superpower would sniff in his direction if they were looking for a coach this off. I don't think Penn State's going to go back to back Vandy coaches.
No, although I mean, I've seen his name linked with it.
Yeah, I do. I'm like y'all. I kind of think, I mean, Clark Lee is just so married to Vanderbilt, and it's kind of, we may have talked about this before, it's real similar to the Tennessee baseball situation with Tony Vitello, because, I mean, Tennessee baseball was down in the dumps for so long. But when you have a coach that starts winning – and he asks the university for stuff, and they deliver. Because that's one thing Clark Lee's done at Vanderbilt that not even James Franklin could do, even when he was going 9-4 back-to-back. I mean, Clark Lee really pounded the pavement for facility upgrades, and they delivered. They delivered. And if you look at Clark Lee's first three seasons, it was 2-10, 5-7, 2-10. But they delivered on the facilities, and that's a tough – that would be a tough situation for Clark Lee mm-hmm. to walk away from because he is an absolute hero at his alma mater right now. They're neat stories. And you think about this is a former mentor pupil game because in 2017 and bring Mike Elko of Texas A&M into this when Kelly was at Notre Dame in 2017, Elko was his DC and Elko said, you need to look at Clark Lee for linebackers coach. And so Lee was the linebackers coach at Notre Dame in 2017, and then Elko left to be the DC at A&M, and Brian Kelly was so impressed with 1 year of Clark Lee that he promoted him to defensive coordinator.
Isn't there a little bit of that with Eli and Hugh Freeze as well? Did Eli work for Freeze at Arkansas State? Or did they intersect? I want to say that maybe there's there's a little bit of that from because I know I mean Eli's from that. From that Gus adjacent sort of area,
right? Because he was a quality control coach for the national championship team.
Mm-hmm. And they'll be colliding this weekend in a game we talked about a little bit earlier. Where, unlikely as it is, Missouri still with a chance to win a lot of the games left on their schedule.
Yes, agreed. And I mean, it's hard to believe that it's October 18th and they'll be on the road. I just think the biggest key for that game is both of them got decked a little bit last weekend, and so it's kind of like who gets off the mat the quickest and the most impressively. And just from what I saw out of Auburn in that second half, I mean, it seemed like just the way they acted, that seemed like the more devastating loss.
Yes.
Missouri certainly had their chances to knock off Alabama, and everybody knows that was a great atmosphere up at Faurot Field and how much they were wanting to beat a named team like Alabama. But I just think Missouri right now is playing better. They kind of know who they are, and, they certainly didn't fold against Alabama the way Auburn folded against Georgia. So, I think Missouri should be the slight favorite and should win a close game.
Yeah, you would.
I did think it was interesting that this game has a very low over-under total as well. I mean, this is not I think 43.5 is the over-under on this thing.
Well, I mean, you watch Auburn games. Auburn hasn't allowed more than 24, and they, if they score 20, it's almost cause for celebration. But wanted to get your thoughts on quickly. You think this is it for Billy Napier? I mean, there's a lot of buzz going on that it's not just if they lose to Mississippi State Saturday night. This just may it with the open date coming up for the Gators next week.
Yeah, and you're seeing that more and more with that open date timing, like you're mentioning. I mean, those are always awkward situations. I mean, Gus Malzahn got fired after a win. Mark Richt got fired after a win. I mean, those were regular season finales that they got fired, fired after. But it's always just kind of awkward when you fire a coach after a win. I mean, I read a Mike Bianchi column earlier today just talking about how the optics of that don't look good. But, you know, we're just in a different era. And, I looked it up. He's got the worst record through 44 games of any Florida coach since World War II. And that's kind of saying something because Charlie Pell in 79 started with an 0-10-1 season and had to work his way out of that. But he already had a better record through 44 games than what Napier has.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. What I would assume you're going to be heading to Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, I've had the best run of afternoon kickoffs, but it's come to a close. I've got the ABC night game this week, and then already Lexington next week's the late game on the SEC Network, which is like what 6:45 Central, 7:45 Eastern. So yeah, but I'll be going down to third Saturday in October, Saturday night.
All right, David, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you got going.
Yeah, timesfreepress.com for the articles and WGOW for Sport Talk, which is 2 to 5 each weekday Central Time.
Always great having you on, David. Really appreciate it. Have a good trip this weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Always enjoy it. You guys have a great weekend as well.
All right, David Pascal joining us from Chattanooga, as he does every Thursday at 5 o'clock. We'll get to our first break, open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. .com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday, and let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And John is up. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Hello, John.
Had a comment and a question. I think I saw this stat regarding Napier at Florida, is that if he wins like his next 17 games, mm-hmm. he would have a record comparable with Ron Zook.
Wow.
Yeah, I know he's got to win. I know he's got to win a lot to get to Mullen, who was the guy that he replaced. Mm-hmm. Like he's got a lot of work to do to get to even get to Dan Mullen, which shows you how rocky of a tenure it's been for Napier thus far.
It has. And so my question is, so Cignetti has re-upped at Indiana. I mean, there aren't 10 James Franklins. So once we get past the A list of candidates, are there any maybe B-level candidates you think could make a coaching move that kind of catch your eye? Like, to me, I think if you put like a Fran Brown at Syracuse, if you put him at Kentucky, I think that would be kind of scary for a lot of this conference. And just your thoughts on any kind of middle-tier coaching candidates that you think could find a home or be successful in the conference.
Yep, absolutely. John Summerall should be a head coach in the SEC next season. I don't know where, but he should be a head coach in the SEC
I think he will be a head coach in the SEC next year.
I think John's pick of Fran Brown, you don't hear it as much. I think Fran Brown's going to be an excellent head coach. He's already done a good job at Syracuse. Heck of a recruiter at Georgia. He could be scary.
You'd have to bicker a little bit about like who's on the A-list and who isn't. I've been super impressed by Alex Golish this season at South Florida. You know, he inherited a mess at USF. This is a guy who was Josh Heupel's right-hand man at UCF and Tennessee, was the play caller at Tennessee before he left for the job at South Florida. And they could be the best non-major conference team in America.
I just wonder that if you're thinking about Auburn, would Auburn be hesitant to go out and get another play caller?
Sure.
Offensive play caller as a head coach. I mean, because it just seems like anytime there's a struggle, you wonder, you know, is it the coach? Is it the offensive coordinator? I still see people saying, look, this all goes back to Hugh Freeze admitting that he's not calling all the plays. He never admitted he wasn't calling all the plays. He said, that Derek Nix is responsible for first down and Ken Austin's responsible for third down. That doesn't mean they're calling the plays, but it's so confusing, and I just wonder if another offensive play caller, you know, you might have a little hesitation before you went and got another offensive play caller.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's some in coaching when you talk about with Auburn and a job, you marry the opposite of your ex, and I feel like Auburn's had a run here now of offensive guys that it would make sense if the right defensive candidate came along, and I think we've already mentioned a couple right here. Mm-hmm. It would make a lot of sense if Auburn decided to go in that direction the job came
right. Would you have Clark Lee in that conversation too?
Would have Clark Lee on there.
I think you'd definitely kick the tire. You'd definitely see if he's interested.
I'd say Clark Lee. I mean, we talked about both of these guys earlier. I think Clark Lee and Brent Key at Georgia Tech, I think it may be tough for them to leave their alma maters. You may not be able to get them out of their alma maters, but you better ask because they are doing a lot with not as nearly as many resources as teams that are going to be coming on the market.
Who is this
coaching carousel?
Obviously Glenn Schumann's name comes up, but I mean,
who is the
hot assistant? Because, you know, Kurt Cignetti right now is as hot as it gets. This is his first head coaching job, and people,
he was at James Madison.
Oh, yeah. That's right. But I mean, there are people.
This is Kirby's first head coaching job.
Well, you're right.
there are some coaches.
I was just wondering
Marcus Freeman.
Had Lanning been a head coach before?
No,
he had not.
Yeah, so you'd have to go with somebody who is a coordinator at one of the powerhouses right now, and it's like, you know, I'm scraping in my head.
DeBoer's guy?
Yeah. Does somebody just think Ryan Grubb? Yeah, just think Ryan Grubb should be a head coach right now?
Are people gonna believe in Charlie Weiss Jr.? Like, I know who a lot of – if Ole Miss has a fantastic season. Like,
no, I don't know. It's still tough to separate Lane from that. I mean, I don't know.
He just doesn't have it.
That's what I mean.
I'm trying to remember Ohio State's – I mean, Patricia. I don't think Patricia's going to be in that spot at Ohio State.
Probably not.
Is Hartline still the OC there? Didn't Hartline get that job?
Yeah, is he still there?
Because Chip's gone.
What about Colin Klein?
Colin Klein would be a heck of a head coach.
But
we were mentioning
it almost seems to
you
fit
have to be
Auburn
in elite
be
programs and elite yes. schools. Like yeah, you need yeah. to be the Georgia or the Alabama or the Ohio State assistant to be.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a name that meets like the way people talked about Kirby right before he got the job,
or
Lanning more recently than that. I don't know if there's an assistant
because there's no Saban.
Yeah,
that's right. There are no.
His guys all have
yes.
Yeah, they all have jobs.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating situation to be in for sure. I think if you're
which direction do you think Florida moves in? I mean, there's been obviously Lane is at the top of everybody's list. I don't know that Lane's leaving Ole Miss for Florida.
I have heard that Lane is in the mix, or they're going to reach out to Lane if they make that move. I heard Brent Key as well.
You know how I heard
Marcus Freeman.
Marcus Freeman
is about to get a big old salary increase from Notre Dame.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I don't think he wants to leave Notre Dame, nor should you leave Notre Dame. But Penn State and Florida being open will definitely get there. And, you know, if a team like Auburn gets open, I'm sure you'd be crazy not to at least
listen.
See. John, if, like, you know.
John started this call talking about Fran Brown, who I think could be in some of these conversations with the way Syracuse is going. And I wouldn't – you know, another ACC coach. You know, we mentioned Brent Key. You mentioned Fran Brown. Like, Duke's good. And I'm not the biggest Manny Diaz guy, but Duke is good in year two,
Dan, we've seen what that looks like at a big job. Duke's not a big job. We've seen what it looks like at a big job.
And I know people might think like, well, Elko's working at a big job.
It's like
now
if Dan, it's
not the same.
It's like if Dan Mullen works out at UNLV, it's like we've seen what this is at other places. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. And honestly, not to shade Ole Miss too much. But that's kind of where I'm looking at with Lane. It's like, all right, we've seen Lane at the big, big job. Is it a guarantee that
I don't think Lane needs to go anywhere.
No.
Lane can be the face of Ole Miss football forever. I mean,
even before he started winning national championships, it was crazy for Dabo to ever think of leaving. Because it's like, you're the guy if you
keep
it up.
Absolutely.
And that's... You know, that's the thing with Cignetti.
Hemingway Vaught. I mean, is it going to be Kiffin Field? And
like, but here's the thing with the stadium. Here's the thing with like Cignetti is a great example of this. People are going to be like, well, why would you stay at Indiana when you could go coach at Penn State or you could go coach at Florida or X, Y, or Z? And it's like, look, man, especially for Cignetti, who's 65, but like your legacy being one of the best, like the best coach a program has ever had, one of the most successful, that's something that lasts a very, very long time. And just because you can make that jump to a bigger program, now, if you stay in Indiana and you never win a national championship, do you think people think less of Kurt Cignetti?
No.
Right. And it's like, yes, you have the national championship, but that's not the be-all, end-all. I'll tell you this. Would you rather be Kurt Cignetti or Ed Orgeron? Like, just winning it all does not guarantee you anything long-term.
There are multiple national champions, coaches who won national championships that are not the Frank Beamer of their programs.
That's right.
And he won here.
He only made it two more years after it. Like, I mean, that's my thing. That's my thing. If you find a place that you fit and you're appreciated and you're well compensated and they're giving you what you want, why leave?
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with more of your phone calls in the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final 20 minutes or so, and let's get right back to The Drive hotline. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. I want to say one thing about Lane Kiffin, and then I want to talk about the game. Okay, so you make the comment that Lane's happy where he's at. Well, then why was he going to go to Auburn? He said, I was going to make my final decision. I was going to make my decision, and then my daughter talked me into staying. Those words only mean one thing. He was going to go. We were not offering him the same amount of money that Ole Miss was offering. If we came back with a big, big offer, there's no way he wouldn't consider Auburn. Okay, that's all I want to say on that.
I would say the fact that he's won 21 games since that offer came along there and has even solidified himself even more there would probably make it a little tougher again.
Well, but if we came back with a $12.5 million offer to make him the highest paid coach, that would be a lot better than what we offered him before. I think he was willing to take less money to come to Auburn before. That's a lot. That means more to me than anything in the world. It wasn't like, oh, I wanted to stay so bad, he was wanting to go for less money, and his daughter talked him into it. And somebody told me that his daughter plays volleyball at one of the, I think UCLA. I don't know if Dan told me that, but that would be great if she'd come to Auburn because that would help our volleyball team out. But I want to talk about the game. I may be wrong, but when I was watching the game, I kind of fast forwarded through it because I was just wanting to see the main plays. But I believe that Kirby started the game out playing base defense, and I think he blocked straight up man on man, which is what he normally does on the line, and we were able to block. And when we play teams that play us straight up, we can block and we can run and we can do the short passes, and we do have time to do it. And I think in the second half, he changed and started doing the stunts that Texas A&M did because Oklahoma showed the game plan of the stunting. The stunting killed us in Oklahoma. And then Texas A&M did the same thing, and we could not block. I just think we cannot block the stunts. When we don't have someone in front of us just straight up blocking, that's where we fail. And so I think that if you look at it, I think that's kind of what killed us in the second half. Obviously, some of the plays were open. I mean, the one where three was going across. He was wide open and he threw it at his feet.
Oh and yeah, so Perry. Perry was. Yeah, I mean, you Perry, had a couple. You had the pass at Perry's feet. You had the overthrow of Singleton, and then you had the fourth down pass to Preston Howard. I mean, those were
that's right.
You would think. Very makeable completions.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it really is time to move on to Deuce or whoever. I think at this point you're almost stupid. I think against this defense, there was a stat that I heard, and I don't know if I misheard it or if I know it was said that in the first five games, Missouri had only attempted 9 passes over 20 yards the whole year. And that was against jump teams and everything. I don't know if it was completed, but I don't think it was completed. I think it was attempted.
No, they have not thrown the, and part of that is because they don't have guys that they consider, you know, game-breaking receivers that are able to either beat the defense downfield or are great at going up in traffic and making the catch. So no, they're not throwing the ball down the field as much with Brabula as they have the last couple of years when they had much better receivers too.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we need to play up, play aggressive up defense, up on them, and don't let them do those quick passes. And I think our defense should do great. The problem I have with the last game, and I mean, obviously, it's like I was telling my brother. I said watching Auburn football as a fan is like death by a thousand cuts. It literally is. If you are a boxer.
Did I say that?
Hitting you with body shots over and over and over and over until you just fall to your knees and you just can't take it anymore. But when they did that play where they overturned it, the touchdown, that just sucked the wind out. I mean, we were all screaming. I spent more time screaming during the thing when, oh, that's a touchdown, that's a touchdown. I mean, I used up more energy just basically happy that we were going to get the touchdown. And then when they said no, it's almost like we felt like the world was against us. And I feel like they were not going to let us win that game. I mean, that's what I told my brother. I said, they are not going to let us win this game. And it's hard. You could have overcome it. You should have done this and you should have done that. When you have that kind of just unfairness, It just sucks the wind out of you. It just makes it almost impossible to play and get your mojo back. And I think that's what people don't understand. I think if we score that touchdown, I don't even think they score at the end of the half. Now I think we win 31-10. That's what I think. I think that touchdown, that overcall, the way that they did it, where it was irrefutable evidence, clearly, not just by the nose of the football, but by half the football was over the line. It's like it only has to touch the front of the line. And so, to me, it just completely – everybody in the whole stadium was just like, oh, my God, they're literally going to – on national TV, they're going to do that. And J-Boy was completely right. If this comes – and I know y'all may be taking up for the guys or whatever, but I feel like Cohen has a lot of responsibility here because I'm sorry, but this would not happen at Alabama. This would not happen at Georgia. This would not happen to Nick Saban or Kirby Smart. This would not happen on national TV unless they knew – we were going to allow it to happen. We allow it to happen at Auburn. And I just want to say one thing. When it comes to coaches, we're paying our coach $6.7 million. Auburn makes $1.6 billion a year. And I'm telling you, there is no way that it costs $1.6 billion to run that university. And for us to sit here and go, well, you know, we'll see which coach we can get, blah, 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 blah. We are a top team. We have tradition of, we are a football school. As much as we want to say we're becoming a basketball school, we are a football school. And for us to just lay down and say, well, you know, we just can't afford it. You know, we can't afford to go get a good coach like Lane Kiffin. We can't pay him $12 million. We should pay him $12 million, make him the highest paid coach so we can brag that we are the school that will go get the best coach. And our players will then stay. And the advantage we get in Lane is now next year, Ole Miss doesn't have Lane Kiffin. So that game, that losing game right there, that sixth loss is now probably a win. And I guarantee you more people would go to Atlanta if Lane Kiffin was our head coach than if John Summerall or somebody like that was our coach. I'm just telling you, it's our opportunity right now for all of the 5 years of misery that we've gone through. Auburn fans deserve for our school to give us a great coach. They not a hope and pray kind of coach, but they need to give us a good coach. And I'm just telling you, the difference between that and not having a great coach is the world. And we have done it, tried it. The definition of insanity, we talk about Hugh Freeze, the definition of insanity. He's the perfect example. Well, Auburn is the perfect example. We keep trying these has-been coaches, and we got to just quit doing that. We just got to quit doing it. It's like that's my say on the thing. But I don't think it's all Hugh Freeze's fault. In terms of, we should be 5-1 without the refs, But I do think offense, he's got to take ownership. He's got to, there's no reason that he's playing these two quarterbacks the last 3 years when he can't make them better. And so that's on him. It's on him. And there's no way, if Lane Kiffin was our coach 3 years ago, there's no way that we would not be a top in the playoffs this year. There's no way we wouldn't be in the playoffs. I'm just saying it straight up. There's just no way. There's just no way. Anyway, thanks, guys. Where you going?
Appreciate the call, Pat. There's definitely some strong emotions.
Yeah. I'm not as certain as Pat on some things.
No, I'm not quite.
I mean, I don't disagree.
I mean, he makes some really good, makes some really good points.
I don't disagree too much with some of the broad strokes of it. But, I mean, and I think
there have been some similarities and some ties between among Auburn coaches that have been hired over the last half century, but there haven't been an awful lot of has-beens.
Oh, I think Auburn.
I mean, there aren't an awful lot of guys that you feel like they're just hanging on in their careers and were once much better than they are now.
I think Auburn tried something different with Brian Harsin and something different with Hugh Freeze. Now, that's not to say that either of them, the Brian Harsin experiment did not work, and the Hugh Freeze experiment is seemingly trending in the wrong direction. And picking someone with more recent success in the SEC or more recent success as a major conference coach.
Now, what Auburn hasn't done and what fans at every school want to be done is that home run superstar hire. But it's easier said than done.
But also, you're not in a position to make that hire. You're not. You're just not. You're all like A-list top of the line coach. If Auburn is getting a new coach in 2026, he's walking into a job that has been in the bottom half of the SEC for the last several years.
Yes, indeed.
Those schools don't, even with the SEC, those schools don't buy at the top of the market. And I think when you look at the history of Auburn football, there's been a good bit of success with coaches that there were just good fits here. And it didn't really matter that they weren't the biggest name out on the block. And I think that's something you got to consider moving forward. Like, if Auburn makes a coaching move today or tomorrow or next week or at the end of the season, they're not going to be able to do what Alabama did and get Kalen DeBoer, get the guy who just coached in the national championship.
Get Nick Saban.
Yeah. You're not in that position. You're not in that position. You need somebody who's going to be willing to invest, buy in, grow here and win here and build something, because this is going to be a build. This is not a snap your fingers. You're gonna start contending for championships again. You're just not.
The thing you need, and I'm not saying this is where you look to find him, but you need your Josh Heupel.
Yes.
Like you look at what Tennessee went through for years between Fulmer and Heupel before they found somebody that felt like he was actually going to give the program an identity and something sustainable. Yep. Now look, Pat was just beating the drum for Lane Kiffin. Maybe Lane Kiffin would be Auburn's Josh Heupel in that regard. I think there are other interesting options too out there potentially if that's where this thing is going, but I think it's not about I think the idea that you're gonna poach someone in an excellent situation in major conference college football
who very
right
well
now,
could be in the playoffs this year, that'd be very, very tough. All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Buildings.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of the Thursday Drive.
Justin, tell folks about the Auburn Observer and all the work that you'll be up to now the basketball season's in full swing as well.
Got full observations from last night's exhibition between Auburn basketball and Oklahoma State. Got stories this week covering Auburn heading into this Missouri game. Dan and I are going to go record a podcast here shortly. Previewing Auburn, Missouri, recapping Auburn, Oklahoma State. Mailbag out tomorrow as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on. AuburnObserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. We email everything out to you as soon as it drops. And like I said earlier, if you subscribe right now in the morning, you'll get two paid things. It's been a busy week. I mean, we've had a ton of stuff this week. It's been kind of an overdrive with all that's gone on with basketball and football in full swing.
I'm surprised you haven't had the TV on. Dodgers and the Brewers are tied going to the third.
We'll be all right. I want to stay focused on this. I thought maybe you just didn't want to know what was going on until it's over. We'll be all right.
Like that. Fun show today. Tomorrow, Coach Don Dunn will be in, and yeah, we will continue looking ahead toward the weekend, including the Auburn Missouri game and much more. But we're out of time here on the Thursday Drive.
Mizorowski out there for the Brewers.
Oh, is that right?
Now to save the day.
They need something, no question about it. All right, that's going to wrap things up for the Thursday Drive. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
Affordable Comfort Cooling Systems Supply.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.